Welcome. My name is Patch Blakey, and I recognize a few of you, which has its upsides and downsides, because that means that a few of you recognize me, but then again, I told you who I am, so why don't we begin with a brief word of prayer and ask God's blessing upon us. I'll pray. Father, we thank you for your abundant mercy and grace, and we thank you for your living word, as well as your indwelling Holy Spirit. And I thank you very much for these folks and for their commitment to raising up godly offspring to your glory. And I pray, too, thank you for their commitment to classical Christian education. And I pray that you would bless our time together. And I pray that you'd give me wisdom and grace in what I have to say, and that it would be a help and a source of encouragement to these folks. And if we don't get to answer all their questions now, I pray that they would feel the freedom, Lord, to call at a future point in time or email, and we'd be able to help answer their questions. And we commit our time now to you and pray in Jesus' name. Amen. Sorry for that paid service announcement in the midst of my prayer. It just came to me. This is not the title of my talk, if you're looking at your... But it's the same talk. It's just the sheet that I had was an old sheet. I'm going to go over a few items that I found back in January at on the internet. There was an article from the Richmond Times-Dispatch on schools debate value of accreditation. And I thought there's a lot of good pros and cons in this with regard to education or with regard to accreditation. So let's just take a quick plow through them. Accreditation is a way for parents to tell whether a school measures up. You need guidelines for whatever you do. It's a way of holding a school accountable. And the standards cover a wide range from academics to facilities. It's a long article, so we're just highlighting. Now, here's a good one. It's a waste of money. You got to get the cons as well as the pros. The requirements are beyond the scope of what we want to do. One gentleman said, we didn't see a need for it. Not being accredited hasn't hampered our school's students from being admitted to universities. We found that if our kids made the grades, they got into the colleges of their choice. Since 1966, we've graduated 27 classes of students, and they have gone on to become successful doctors, lawyers, missionaries, and teachers. And all those things, quite honestly, are true. Those are true statements. For some schools, it's not worth the money. Students do get into colleges. They do go on and become very capable people in the business world or in the communities or whatever else. But, again, these are negative comments as well as the positive. In general, parents, this is one of the most common ones. In general, parents want a school to be accredited, but they don't know what that means. And if you think about it, one of the questions that I've often heard from schools, they say, well, parents are always asking us, are you accredited? So we want to be accredited. And I said, have they ever asked who's accrediting you? No. Have they ever asked what the standard is for accreditation? Well, no. What does it mean to those parents when they say, are you accredited? Well, I don't know. And the parents don't know. I mean, I asked it as a parent before I found about classical Christian education. We're going to put our child in a Christian school. And I said, so are you accredited? Yes. Okay. But by who? Was it some offshore island in the Caribbean? Or, you know, I really didn't know. And I didn't ask. I didn't know enough to ask. Accreditation seems to make parents feel better. Well, it made me feel better when they said yes. It wouldn't help us to do a better job, but it would help people's view of us. That could be debatable, depending upon the school's view. The school expects to pay about, this is not ACCS. The school expects to pay about $12,000 for fees and expenses associated with its first quest for accreditation. I'll get to what it costs for ACCS. We come in slightly under that. I'm being facetious. We come in way under that. We do feel the cost is worth it. Here's just the opposite. Before, we didn't feel the cost was worth it. Now somebody else says, we feel the cost was worth it. noting several advantages come from being accredited. And then here's a couple of the reasons. Accreditation would make it much easier to transfer credits. And I'll cover that more specifically here in Texas, where ACCS is recognized officially. There's a financial incentive. In order to receive certain matching grants, you need accreditation. I've heard that a lot from schools seeking accreditation. Then this particular woman described accreditation as energizing, helping the administration, faculty, and staff to focus on their overall objectives for the school. And it says, one other note was, it has helped us become more conscious of why we do what we do. And then it says, when a school is accredited, you're assured there is a certain level of quality that's being met. It's a comfort to parents, and it makes easier transfer of credits. That's already covered. Yeah, those are all good. So here is sort of a outline of what we're going to cover. The what and why of accreditation, what is accreditation, why seek accreditation, ACCS accreditation, how does it work, what's the cost, what's the process, are there any pitfalls to ACCS accreditation, the process, in other words, what are the pitfalls that a school could get into through that process, and then some helpful resources. First of all, what is accreditation? And these are just dictionary sorts of answers to that question. To certify a school, college, or the like as meeting all formal official requirements of academic excellence, curriculum, facilities, etc. came from a very reliable source, dictionary.com. Those are all the definitions, though, that you were all anticipating or expecting anyway. And then the others, the act of accrediting or the state of being accredited, it's all along the same lines. What are the standards and is the school meeting it? And who's giving that good housekeeping seal of approval that the school is indeed meeting that standard? Okay, why seek accreditation? 2 Corinthians 10:12 says, "For we dare not make ourselves of the number or compare ourselves with some who commend themselves. But they, measuring themselves by themselves and comparing themselves among themselves, are not wise." And the first thing is, we dare not do that. I mean, we don't even think about comparing ourselves. Let's not make ourselves the standard. You know, the one school's comment was, why do we need accreditation? We already know we're doing a good job, or something to that effect. Well, it's appropriate. I hope a school board would know that they're doing a good job. But at the same time, we don't want to make ourselves the standard. It's appropriate. And what Paul is saying here to the Corinthian church is there is another standard. I'm not certain of the exact context here, but in general, for us as Christians, we know the standard is the God's word, the Bible. There is an objective standard by which we are judged. So in the same set of thinking in ACCS, if ACCS is accrediting a school, or if a school is seeking accreditation with ACCS or any other accrediting agency, they're subjecting themselves to an objective standard. It's something that another agency or body or group outside of the school has established as a means of evaluating how that school is doing. Because if we measure ourselves by ourselves or compare ourselves among ourselves, Paul says, we're not being wise. So wisdom is an issue here. Going on and looking at Proverbs, let another man's lips praise you and not your own. I didn't quote that. I just paraphrased it. You think about it, you know, that everybody says, well, I'm the best there is in this. Or somebody told me he's the best there is in that. Well, how did you find that out? Well, he told me. He told me himself that he's the best. Okay. A reliable source, firsthand. And then Proverbs, the second one there, many men will proclaim their own goodness, but a faithful man who can find. Everybody is going to tell you how good they are. That's the foundation under which advertising is set up in this country, probably anywhere in the world. Everybody's going to tell you how good their product is, why they are the best, and everything else. I'm going to do that a little bit today, so exercise some wisdom here, even in what I'm saying. It's the nature of men. But also, this is an interesting thing. Why seek accreditation? There is a benefit for going through the accreditation process, and one of the comments made by one of the people in this article was is that it helped them focus. It helped the board, administration, faculty, everybody focus more on what they were doing and how they were doing it. And in the process of doing that, we call that a self-study in ACCS, in the process of doing that self-study, focusing on the way you're doing business, you find out, well, am I missing policies? Do I have a curriculum guide? Is there a portion of the curriculum guide for everything we're doing? PE. Do I need a section of the curriculum guide for PE? Do I need one for history? I hope the answer is yes. But we look at what we have. We look at the process. Do we have a grievance policy? All those are the sorts of things we want to be looking at, because somebody else is going to come in and look at it, regardless of who you may choose as the organization to do the accreditation. I'm speaking accreditation right at the moment in general terms. The process helps the school focus on its internal structures and creates the opportunity to have outside eyes observe the school operation and provide constructive criticism. Okay, why seek ACCS accreditation? And the biggest reason is that of all the accrediting agencies out there, and there are many accrediting agencies, and there are many Christian accrediting agencies, as well as non-Christian, secular accrediting agencies. And even amongst the secular accrediting agencies, some are touted as far better or superior to others. My primary reason for seeking ACCS accreditation for ACCS schools is that ACCS is the only organization or agency that I'm aware of that accredits with an eye towards the classical methodology. I mean, if you had any other organization come in, they're not geared. They don't know what the classical methodology in the classroom looks like. They don't know what the classical curriculum would look like. They don't have an appreciation for those aspects of it. They could nod and say it looks great, but is the school that's seeking ACCS, seeking accreditation, if they're going through any other organization, is that organization going to help them specifically in the area of classical and Christian education? And right now, ACCS is the only one doing that specifically with regard to accreditation. And why seek ACCS accreditation in Texas? And as I mentioned earlier, ACCS is a member of Texas, the Texas Private School Accreditation Commission. ACCS went through a two-year process of having our bylaws, our organization, our policies, our accreditation standards gone over and reviewed by members of the TEPSAC Commission. They also came and visited or observed ACCS going through the accreditation process at one of our schools in Texas. They critiqued our process of that, made recommendations to help us conform to the TEPSAC standards, an outside look. And they also sent a representative to the ACCS board meeting to see how the board functions and how the board interacts over the issues of accreditation specifically, but also more broadly, how the board functions within the organization. They did to ACCS what ACCS wants to do for our member schools. It's a service to have a second set of eyes look and see how we're doing things. That's a second witness. Our own eyes could be one set of one witness for how we're doing it, but it's also helpful to have those outside set of eyes seeing how we're functioning. And there's some other benefits to being in TEPSAC, early notice for warnings for weather and that sort of thing, dangerous weather. Approximate costs for ACCS accreditation, we don't charge close to $12,000. And this is just strictly what ACCS would bill a school. ACCS, excuse me, I was talking to somebody yesterday who got whooping cough, and I'm hoping I'm not coming down with, no. ACCS charges for initial accreditation $1,000. and we break it both and for a renewal, subsequent renewal, $750, and we divide that so that there's an initial payment of $500, and then after the visit is the remainder. The remainder's due. Then ACCS requires the school requesting the accreditation visit to pay all the financial costs for the visiting commission, visiting committee to come to the school, their travel, their air, their room and board. And on the first visit, it's higher than on the renewals typically because we send three people on the initial visit. We could send more depending upon the size of the school, but we're committed to sending three. On renewal visits, we have a minimum of two. We'd never send a single person to do an accreditation visit. It's unfair to the school, and it's unfair to the person going. Again, it's a single witness thing. Biblically, you want to have two or three witnesses. But it might cost just as much for the second one if it's a large school. For example, when we came back to do Regents School of Austin here early in February, we brought three members back 4 years, 5 years earlier. When we did the last renewal visit, we only had two, and it was a pocket full of work for just two people to scuttle around and see everybody and see all the classes, observe all the paperwork. And we said, at that point in time, we really need to be able to flex to have the number of committee members beyond the ground who can actually serve the school and in a timely way. Well, what is the accreditation process? And to demonstrate or discuss the process, we'll use a flow chart. First of all, is the school an ACCS member? ACCS does not accredit any school that is not, first of all, a member of ACCS. So the question is, have you got one of those little plaques on your wall that's signed by me with a gold seal that says you're an official member of ACCS? And if not, the answer is join ACCS. There is a minimum standard for joining ACCS. I won't go into all of that, but there is a minimum standard. And by the way, a lot of schools join ACCS with the stated objective that they want to be held accountable for the way they operate their classrooms. That's a good way of going about it. Join an organization that has similar or the same beliefs about education as your school, and there's a level of accountability that goes on there. But membership in ACCS is a low bar. Accreditation is a high bar. And so join ACCS, that's one level of accountability. But if you're going to join ACCS for accountability, well, go all the way and pursue accreditation, which is the high bar. But if you're a member of ACCS, the other next question is, has the school been in operation for at least 5 years, and does the school have grades 1 through 12? ACCS will not accredit a school that doesn't go all the way. We'll wait until you graduate your first senior class before you can actually receive your accreditation. We will visit a school that's grade actually has on the ground in the classrooms grades 1 through 10, but we won't accredit that school until they actually graduate 2 years hence that 12th grade class. It just also happens to coincide with when the renewal visit occurs. We do a renewal visit 2 years out. The initial renewal visit is 2 years out. Then a school at that point in time is able to be accredited up to 5 years, depending upon how that second look goes. If a school is not, doesn't meet those criteria, well, apply when the criteria are met. The school submits an application. I'll show you one of those and walk you through it a little bit. If the application is reviewed by me at ACCS, if it's approved, the school is assigned candidacy status. If not, whatever is missing, I generally just get on the phone or send an email back to the head of the school and say, I don't see this, this, or this, and they'll turn around and email it to me or fax it to me, and they say, fine, and then we turn around and send out the letter. But the objective is to work with the school to help the school achieve its goal of accreditation. We're not there to be clubbing otters on the beach of Washington. We want to work with the school to help them become accredited. We're not trying to make it as hard as possible. Then, after the school has been assigned candidacy status, it has up to 1 year from the date of the candidacy status assignment to compile its self-study, its documentation package. And I have some information on that. And we'll talk about that in a little bit. You can also grease the skids if the school wants and do your documentation package in advance, submit your application for accreditation. When it comes back for candidacy status, approved for candidacy status, turn around and send your documentation right in the next day if you want. There's nothing that says you have to wait a year, but you can't go more than a year. And the reason we did that in ACCS, we used to have, when we first started this, we had, maybe 14, 15 schools apply for accreditation. And out of those, only about five actually pursued it aggressively. And 3 years later, we still had maybe 10 or 11 schools that were in candidacy status and really hadn't done anything about it, and because we hadn't thought far enough ahead when we were putting this wagon together in our backyard. How do we keep this process moving? How do we motivate a school to complete or finish the job that they're undertaking? And so we said, well, give them a year to get their documentation package together, and if they don't, ACCS keeps their initial $500 deposit and tells them they have to start over again. Those are the teeth in our accreditation process. But quite honestly, I've never seen anybody who's failed to meet that one-year deadline since we put that in place. Documentation package is submitted on time, comes to the ACCS office. I'll look at it and review all the documentation. I'll talk about what that looks like. If not, the school forfeits its $500 and has to start over. It's starting to sound like a board game. The package is reviewed. If it's approved, the school is notified, and we move on from there. If there are missing documents, again, I'll go back to the school, and I'll send a letter every time to the head of the school saying, this line item in the accreditation process isn't in your package. Or I'll even go to the extent of saying, you said that the board member criteria are on page 39 of your bylaws or your policy manual, and they're actually on page 34. And I'll give them that level of detail, because when the accrediting committee gets the report, they don't want to be turning pages, taking time, because they're heads of school or they're board members of a school that's already been accredited. And if they get a little bit tight if it takes them a lot of time to find the information that the school is trying to point them to, and it makes the process rocky. So you want to have it. I want the process to go smoothly for the school. The school wants the process to go smoothly. So I'll go back with as much detail as I can, telling the school, you know, these points don't line up and you need to fix that. But I give a detailed letter, so, and then you're always free to call me and say, what did you mean by that? Here, let me push this up a little bit. After the school has had their documentation package approved, reviewed and approved, I'll ask the school to select maybe two or three dates, and they'll pick through two or three weeks out of the year. More dates I get, the better, because I have to go to this broad range of people across the country who are qualified to be on an accreditation committee for ACCS and coordinate three different schedules to get them to all fall in the same window. And the school can prioritize their preferences for a visit, but if they give me three and I pick the priority number three, well, that's when everybody can come. So don't give me a date that you don't want anybody to come. I assign the committees. I'll tell the school who the committee members are and ask the school then to send an exact copy or corrected copy of the documentation package that I received to the committee members for their review, and then they all know the date. The committee members have 30 days to review and approve that package and then make preparations, get their plane tickets, that sort of thing. I'll go back to the school and tell the school what its preparation requirements are, and then we just press ahead. If the committee says, there's something missing here, if I missed it, shame on me, but I'd like to have it happen before we send the committee to the school, and now the school's paying for airfare for three guys, paying for hotel rooms and whatever else, knowing that it's not a good deal for the school, it's probably going to be a failure before we go. I'd rather have them find that out in advance. And it gives us time. There's a loop in there to try and fix whatever the discrepancies are early on. If they just can't provide it for whatever the reason, they're terminating the process, and we go back to ground zero again and start over. But assuming that the process, the review by the committee is fine, the school makes preparation for the visit, school visit occurs, 2 days on the ground, the committee drafts a report in 3 weeks after the visit, submits it. I was on a committee for, I went to three visits at this last April, and we literally had the report done before we left the school. We just burn the midnight oil and get it all done before we leave so that it can happen quickly and smoothly, and we're not slowing the school down. Okay. The school then has, the report is then sent to the school. The school has 30 days to review the report, challenge any discrepancies that the committee identified, provide a rebuttal in their letter or in a response if they want to. If they're in full agreement, they can just say so. The report is then sent to the ACCS Board of Directors, and the ACCS Board of Directors have 30 days to review the report, review the documentation, ask any questions, and then make a decision. If the school is approved, it's approved for 2 years, accredited status, and then it starts the process over again with the renewal visit, and they have to resubmit an application for renewal, and we go through the whole thing again, but there's a lot less documentation on that second look. We're anticipating that things aren't going to have changed radically from the first look to the second look. But we do want to see bylaws, we want to see policy manuals, we want to see the curriculum guide. Those are the kind of the key documents that we want to see. We don't want to get down into all the minutia of the accreditation guidelines. Although the school is subject to having the committee look at all of those things when they come, we're just not asking you to build this giant package. This is the accreditation application. Sort of the standard, it's asking for the standard contact information, geographical information, when the school was founded, that sort of thing, contact. And then we ask for formal action from the board, school board, indicating its decision to pursue ACCS accreditation. What if the head of the school says, oh, this is a great thing, sends off a letter, says we want to do it, here's a check, and the board doesn't know anything about it? I mean, that's a black eye, especially if a visit committee gets there, and one of the first things we do is meet with the board of directors, and that's the first time the board's finding out that they're pursuing ACCS accreditation, and they were really thinking about going with ACSI or SACS or somebody else. It could be awkward and expensive, unnecessarily. So an official statement from the school board reflecting its decision to adhere to the ACCS Confession of Faith. This should not be difficult because to become a member of ACCS, the school's already done that. It's just a reaffirmation that, and every year when a school renews its membership in ACCS, somebody is signing at the bottom line that they're in agreement with the ACCS Confession of Faith. A verification from the school board that the school is not in violation of state law in the state in which the school resides. Sounds a little silly when I read it out loud, but you understand what I'm getting at. We just wanted the school to tell us to the best of their knowledge that they are not in violation of any state law. And then there's some other items there, public description, mission, policies of the school. And by the way, for the first three, you can do it anyway. You can do it as board action and just send me the portion of the minutes from the board. You can do it in a separate letter signed by the board chairman or a letter from the head of the school affirming that the board has done this or something, anything that communicates the board is bought off on the first three in some solid, concrete way. Item number four, a statement providing public description of the mission, policies, requirements of the school. Typically, the school's brochure that you send out to parents or give to parents who are interested in the school, maybe a parent-student handbook. Anything that you use to communicate to parents or the community what it is that the school does, graduation requirements, dress codes, conduct policy, discipline policy, grievance policy, those things that parents know about the school. That's what I want to receive. That's what ACCS needs to see in this initial application. A list of school board members and the name of the church where each is a member or attends. Not all churches require membership, and we understand that, but if there's some church has regular, a member has regular attendance at a church, we'd like to know that as well. List of the faculty, both full-time and part-time, courses they teach, and any degrees that they have. And then the check and the signature that commits the school to fulfilling the final payment once the visit's completed, anticipating that the visit will come about, and that if, for whatever reason, the committee decides that the school doesn't meet the ACCS accreditation criteria, but now they've been on the ground, they've paid for their tickets, they've stayed at the hotel, paid for the meals, and headed home, we want to know that the school's really going to be paying that, even though they got a look that resulted in the school failing. Nobody's done that to us yet, but it's in there just as a sort of, and it doesn't guarantee that people are going to pay anyway, I would suppose. So, but we do anticipate that Christians being Christians, that they would let their yes be yes and their no, no. This is an abbreviated ACCS documentation package. The opening, the start of it, a school, I would expect to get something from the school. The first line in the ACCS, Section E of the ACCS accreditation standards says just what that says, school goals and objectives, and then that little blurb. And then A, the school must be able to document that it is maintaining its published mission and goals and continues to serve in accord with the ACCS statement of faith. Well, this school that submitted this said, okay, first item there, documentation, one, policy manual, exhibit one, and then they list the sections or the pages or someplace that shows us what the school's published mission and goals are. Whether it's the bylaws, policy manual, maybe it's all of those, or a statement, the parent-teacher guide, or a brochure to the that you hand out to parents. Wherever you document what it is the school does, we are a classical Christian school. We use the grammar, logic, rhetoric, the trivium, and we honor Christ. And we acknowledge the Bible to be the final authority. You know, whatever it is that you say and do about the school, that's where you start detailing it out in specifics. Grammar school curriculum guide, secondary curriculum guide. This is just an example. You don't have to use this exact. I used to have the whole thing in our handbook, and as soon as I got, I said, this is a great one from a particular school. This is a great way to do this, and I included their whole documentation in that handbook, the accreditation handbook, and wouldn't you know it, the next school just Xeroxed that and sent that back for their documentation. Figured it worked once, don't mess with something that works. But then they broke it down, they said, two, explanation, the policy manual spells out our mission, the curriculum guide serves as proof that we are offering a classical Christian education, and so forth. But that's just an example. What I'm now, I just had a meeting with my board of directors yesterday, and we're generating another document. I've had a couple of schools send us a CD with PDF files and links within the PDF file. Instead of sending me a big notebook with lots of tabs and Xerox pages, it's sure a lot easier just to get that CD and be able to click on that little blue underscored link, and it says, whatever it is, policy manual, exhibit 1, section 2.1, 2.3, pages 8 and 5, and that's underlined, you click on it. For the reviewer who's already got his hands full being the administrator of a school or head of a school board and doing whatever else he's doing, it's really helpful if we can simplify that data. And it's a lot less costly. I had one school send me a box around Christmas time. It was huge. It must have weighed probably 35 pounds, and I was really hoping it was one of those wine baskets. And what it was their documentation package. So, no cheese. No crackers. This is just a quick list. Don't copy anything down here. We'll give you all of this if you're eager in pursuing, interested in pursuing accreditation. This is all going to be, or this already is in our accreditation handbook. But this is just samples of some of the documentation that you would might include in your accreditation package, that your documentation package that you're sending in. Okay, I won't let you become fixated on that. Financial integrity statement. ACCS does not have a certified public accountant on its board or on its staff, and we don't require schools that are pursuing accreditation to obtain an audit. That's an expensive investment. It can cost upwards of $4,000 to $5,000. If the school already does it, we'll accept it, but it's not a requirement for ACCS accreditation. We have something that answers our questions for us at a practical level without all the expense. I would encourage, this is one of the hardest things for schools to do. Not that it's anything hard, none of the questions are hard, it just seems to be that I get the documentation package a year later and a note saying, we're still working trying to get somebody to do this for us. We just want someone who is not on the board of directors, not on the faculty or staff. I don't care if they have a child in the school or not. That's fine. Just so long as somebody's not directly tied to the school, either on payroll or responsibility, to come in and give an objective look and answer the questions that are on this list. This list was developed by a CPA. In fact, it was developed by a gentleman who at one time had been president of the National CPA Association, whatever that is. But these are the things we're looking at in this section. Internal controls, planning, financial policies, accounting records, communication. For example, is the school making at least quarterly reports? Is the head of the school making quarterly reports to the board of directors? The board of directors know what the financial state of their school is. And how are they getting that information? It can be monthly, but it ought to be at least quarterly. And what sort of oversight is the board providing? Is the board generating the budget, approving the budget? Where does the budget come from? Does it have a budget? Financial policies, who gets to purchase? How are those purchases approved? How much can they purchase? Who gets to say money goes for this and not for that? How come the third grade teacher gets $500 for classroom supplies and the second and fourth grade teachers don't? We just want to ask the question. Internal controls. Is the person who's receiving those monthly payment tuition checks, is she also the one who's stamping them? Is she also the one who's taking them down to the bank, and is she also the one who's entering them in the QuickBooks accounting software, and then is she also the one cutting the checks? I mean, is she doing this all in the privacy of her little office? Because if she is, that's a problem. Not that she's not trustworthy or that she's done anything with malfeasance involved, but we want to make certain our schools are presenting we don't want the appearance of evil in any way, shape, or form. And so we look for a division of labor, that the person who's receiving the money isn't the person depositing the money. The person who deposits the money isn't the same person putting the money in the bank. There are checks and balances in how you do that. And so we just want to know, one of the things we ask in all of this is we ask either a qualified bookkeeper, not your bookkeeper, not the school's bookkeeper, qualified bookkeeper or an accountant, a business accountant, to come in and do that. I had one school call me up. They actually went and got a CPA, and I said, this should be pretty slick because this was written by a CPA. And the CPA said, now I need some clarification here. What do you mean by this word? What do you mean by that word? And then he came back to me with this multi-page tasking of huge paragraphs detailing in specificity what he was going to do to make certain that he was appropriately following his business guidelines and there wasn't going to be any adverse repercussion to him or to his business or his reputation in the way he did it. I really strongly urge you to get a bookkeeper or an accountant. Okay. This is just the rest of the questions. You don't really need to look at those. Same. Okay, visit dates. Selecting visit dates. And we put this in the box on in the handbook. One of the primary objectives for coming to the school is to actually sit in the classrooms. One of the things we do the most of when we're on the ground at a school is we sit in classrooms and we observe the teachers teaching the students. We want to see the classical methodology applied in the classroom. We want to see the seven laws teaching applied in the classroom. And we sit and we observe classes. Some classes will stay in longer than others. Some we're in shorter than others. It's just a function of how long it takes us to get a feel for how a particular teacher is doing. So what it's really, it's not helpful to the school's visit if the school says, well, you can come this week, but by the way, we're going to have our 9th, 10th, and 11th graders on their field trips that week. So it'll cut down your work a whole lot. We don't have anybody to observe, and so we can't accredit what they're doing. If they have teachers who are really nervous and they say, I'm not coming in that day, I've got to do my cuticles that day. That's not helping us because we really need to see the teachers on the ground in the classroom. And so we ask that the school make certain that they're giving us dates where we're going to see that happen. We want to see how the school normally operates. I've had schools tell me, well, we've got this class out for their field trip, but that's how we normally operate. Yes, but we wanted to see, by normal, we meant teachers in the classrooms teaching students. I can't beat that drum enough, but that's very important because that's where the majority of, if you get to this point, you can bet the paperwork's probably in really good shape, and what we're there for is to see those teachers. Is it really happening in the classroom is the question. A typical visit schedule, we're changing this because day one often communicates to schools that that's when somebody's showing up at the school and that's the first day of the visit and it's really not. We're just calling that a travel day in the update, in the upgrade. So, but there are 4 days generally involved. There's the first day where the committee travels to the school, the second day, which is really the first day of the visit, and then third day, which is the second day of the visit, and then the fourth day, which is another travel day. But on day one of the visit, let's go by the standard, the terminology here. The board or the committee comes in, rather, and they'll meet the night before, and they'll discuss any last-minute requirements, who's taking what responsibility for what portion of the visit. Not that anybody can't observe some other portion and make input to it, but I just want to make certain that there's somebody who's seriously focused on every aspect of that visit, and they own it. On that initial day, and typically we plan on doing the secondary the first day, we'd like to meet over lunch with one 9th grader, one 10th grader, a couple of 11th graders, and a couple 12th graders. We ask that those students not be the board chairman's daughter, the administrator's son, the curriculum director's children. I mean, if one or two are in there, that's understandable. But we really like to see, you can pick your best students, just don't load the gun so obviously. You know what I mean? Blunt the silver bullets a little bit. But we interview the students because that's a great way to see what are the students getting. What are they getting out of this process? What are they getting out of this classical Christian education process that's happening at your school? And it tells us a lot. We find out what the morale in the school is like. We find out what the dress code is like. We find out what the ability, the student's ability is to speak, and we get to see a range of it from the students that we interview. We get to sense a level of maturity. We get to sense a level of appreciation for the teachers and teachers' appreciation for the students. I only just learned tons from these kids. It's frightening. And then meet with full three-time secondary school teachers in the afternoon after the classes are done. We'll sit with them for an hour and just load them down with questions. And again, it's to kind of get a feel or a flavor for the school. We get a lot of that too, just standing in the hallways in between classes. It's amazing what you can just pick up from observing students in between classes, going to their lockers, talking to one another. We meet with the secondary principal after that and discuss. We have questions for him, but we also discuss any of the observations that came out of the meeting with the students and the meeting with his teachers, his faculty members. That evening, we preferable to do dinner that first day of school or first day of the visit, because that second day we really want to focus on take our time on writing our comments, and typically those board meetings, dinner with the board, can go kind of long. We've eaten dinner at big fancy restaurants. We've eaten dinners in people's homes. We've eaten dinner where they've gotten fast food and brought it to somebody's home. We really don't care. We want it to be whatever's a relaxing environment for the board. And we've had at one occasion where the board members brought their wives. I would discourage that in the future. Not that the ladies weren't delightful, it was, but there was a lot more conversation going on, and it protracted the objective of that meeting because we didn't want to be rude to the wives. And they weren't on the board. That was my point in that particular instance. It was a nice thing to do, but it really slowed down the objective. If the wife is on the board, that's great. We don't have any problem with that. And then we'll internally, the next day, that night, we'll go back and we'll discuss all of our comments and kind of finalize our notes from that day and get set for the next day. And one of the things we do is we'll assign who has what from the committee for each of these areas. Day three, we'll come back. We'll sit through the grammar stage classrooms. We'll observe them doing chants, reading, math, Bible verses, quoting, whatever they're doing. We're going to go observe that. Then we'll meet with three teachers. We'll observe paperwork over lunchtime and make certain that we're catching all the things, files, records, that sort of thing. I might even meet with a bookkeeper from the school. And then at the end of the day, we'll meet with either the grammar stage administrator or the head of the school. That night, we will write up or compile all of our comments. And if we have things figured out by then, I'll give the head of the school a call, or the head of the committee will give the head of the school a call and say, we're going to recommend you for accredited status, or we're going to recommend you for probationary status, whatever it is. If there are discrepancies, we will list the discrepancies that will show up in the report. There aren't going to be more discrepancies that show up in the report after that phone call. It's just not, we ought to be upfront and open about what we find. And the administrator and the board ought to be able to take those discrepancies and start right off the bat trying to figure out what they need to do to fix them. It's not serving the school by holding the ball close or hiding the ball. We want to make certain that the school knows right off the bat what the problems are. I went on one visit, and the school board had gone through a lot of turnover, and they, in just the free-flowing conversation, they told us all the things that they'd done in violation of their own bylaws. And we applauded them for their integrity, but we told them that we couldn't accredit that school at that point in time because they weren't even complying with their own bylaws. And we like to be open and honest with the folks that we're dealing with, and just like we appreciate their openness and integrity with us. And then day three, the committee writes up their comments, and I make the call, and then the next morning, we depart. Yes, sir. Yes.
If you would find that the school has some deficiencies, do they have to start the whole process over again, or is there a
The question is, if a school has discrepancies, do they have to start the whole process over again, or is there some intermediary opportunity to correct the discrepancies? Yes, we used to be, it was pass-fail. If they failed, go back to square one and start all over again. And that did not communicate to the board of directors the redemptive nature of Christ. And so we wanted to make this be a redemptive process. If there were discrepancies, point them out to the school. They have up to 2 years to fix those discrepancies before we scrub that whole accreditation visit pluses and minuses and start over again. But keep in mind, too, that two-year process is also the time it takes to come back and do that renewal look. So if the school can document that it's corrected all the discrepancies before that two-year renewal look, and if it's been approved by the ACCS board based on whatever the discrepancies were, for example, said they didn't have a grievance policy. As soon as they sent me a grievance policy, we didn't care if they plagiarized it, crossed out, Southern Classical Christian School and put in Northern Classical Christian School and then sent it off to me, as long as it was their document that met the criteria and I could X out the fact that they had a discrepancy anymore, and they would become an accredited school at that point. If they had a problem, as this one board did, they have 2 years to fix the problem, and I've been talking to the administrator of that school to find out what they've been doing. I've had calls from the board members asking and talking about, well, can we do this, can we do that, depending upon what the issues were, so that we can help them fix their problem and move on and become or pursue accreditation. The objective is to help the school achieve its goal, not find ways to stop them. I'll just show this quickly, but I want to emphasize note D again. It says the administrator is to inform visiting committee 2 weeks out who will be assigned to the interviews for both teachers and students. Again, it's the whole thing. Is the school stacking the deck with the students? And are the teachers that you're giving me, the wife of the administrator, the wife of the head of the school, or the husband of the administrator, we'd like to see your best teachers, we'd like to see your best students. Oftentimes, they are those people, not always, but we'd like to see the best short of being those people. Visit arrangement guidance. I'm not going to go into the detail on this. The page is in the book. I'll just put it up enough to say ACCS will be talking with the head of the school to arrange. The individual committee members will make their own flight arrangements. The ACCS will turn and expect the school to make hotel reservations someplace. And I don't care if it's the Comfort Inn or someplace that's within reasonable distance, driving distance from the school, has a mom-and-pop restaurant outside someplace, or else serves breakfast at the hotel so that the committee members, when they wake up in the morning, can get a bite to eat before they go off to the school. And then ACCS will reimburse the committee members and collect receipts from the committee members, and ACCS will then turn around and bill the school with copies of all those receipts for each committee member, so that the school's not saying, okay, I've got this from you and that from you and where's this from you. You just get one, the school just gets one bill, and we even list the final payment. Okay, accreditation committee protocols. You want to know how that accreditation committee, what are their limits when they're on your campus from ACCS's perspective, and they need to know what their limits are when they're on your campus from ACCS's perspective. And I'm going to skip all the stuff above, but it's expected that the committee will dress in a manner that honors the school, those that are visiting, typically sport coat, tie. However the folks at the school dress, that's how the visiting committee should dress. Make as little disruption to the school's routine as possible during the visit. In other words, the committee shouldn't say, oh, I want you to hold a fire drill right now. We don't have that authority, and I would expect the head of the school to say, no. Go to classrooms to observe, listen, ask, not to teach, seize control, or supplant the teacher. The committee is the fly on the wall. The committee isn't to wrest control of the classroom from the teacher and show the teacher how to teach the class. I had one visit to a school, and I explained this to the committee members. I said, now, don't teach. And the reason I say this is because I went to a school, and this first grade teacher said, Mr. Blakey, would you please stand up and lead the class in singing this song? And I gullibly, naively stood up and did it. Well, my job, I'm not even there as far as they're concerned. I'm invisible. And in fact, it's gotten to the point where we've asked schools not to have their students stand up after the first visit in the morning because it disrupts the class, and that takes away from what we want to observe. So we just say, you might do that normally for visitors. You can do it for the first you know, period of the day, but if you haven't seen us by then, second period of the day, don't do it anymore. We just want to observe the class. But I walked into this one classroom after I'd explained this to the committee, and there was one gent in there teaching the Latin class. And he was very humble about it after I asked him what was going on. He said, "She forced me to. The Latin teacher forced him to do this." So he understood the context for a particular word she didn't understand, but said it doesn't cut it. They're not to correct teacher, student, or staff. That's not our job. There's a chain of command in place at the school, and ACCS visiting committees must recognize it, must honor it, and respect it. It's not the committee's place to tell a boy to spit his gum out or quit talking in class or to quit twiddling his pencil. That's the teacher's job. And if the teacher's not doing it, we will mention that to the administrator, the appropriate administrator, when we get to that point. But it's not our job to either correct the teacher or the student. It should go without reason. We wouldn't want board members bringing family members on the school. You know, some committee member says, "God, it's a neat school. My wife's always wanted to go see their new whatever building." Well, no, we're not letting them bring their spouses. If they bring their spouse, it's because they're going to go spend time doing something else, but they're not coming on the accreditation visit. Okay. Site visit pitfalls. A lot of these are pretty just straightforward. We're not seeing application of the trivium in the classroom. In other words, we're not seeing chants, sing songs, any of those sorts of things that we'd expect to see in the grammar stage. They're not showing up, not memorization. Those sorts of things aren't happening. We're not seeing engagement of the student in a dialectic fashion in the logic stage, or we're not seeing the students engaged in answering thought-provoking questions or making presentations in the secondary, in the poetic stage where we would expect to see those things. And or we're not seeing evidence of the seven laws of teaching. Student input, well, how do the students look? Do we have a dress code, or is there a uniform standard? Is there a multi-form? We don't come and tell the school what the standard is. We might comment privately to the administrator of the school about our observations. But if the school says, you know, the boys are going to have close-cropped hair and they're going to wear a coat and tie and wear socks and no necklaces or bracelets for the guys or something like that, well, if we see a lot of guys doing that, we're going to dock the school because they're not even conforming to their own standards. If the school's standards just say neat, clean, and modest, that's, you know, that's a solid biblical statement, but it doesn't tell us a lot. But we don't have a lot to go on if we feed back. I mean, one person's idea of neat, clean, and modest isn't necessarily another person's, and it's just a little awkward at that point. Teacher input. If the teacher set those, it happens. You get the teachers in there after school, and they say, well, you know, getting support from your administrator, and all of a sudden they just start throwing darts at the guy, you know, because whoever she is or whoever the person is, they don't get supported. When a parent comes in and complains to them, if they don't get their way in the classroom with the teacher, they go to the administrator. The administrator tells them, oh, you go back and work it out with the teacher. There's no support for the teachers, and I've seen that. Well, you know, that teachers are going to voice their concerns to us. You can try and shut them up, but those are the things that pop out at some of these meetings. Typically not, but occasionally they do. Lack of classroom management and control. I've been in some classrooms that's just amazing. The teacher doesn't have to say a word, and kids are going around doing their work quietly at their desk. I'm talking kids like about 7 or 8 years old, working quietly at their desk. There might be a student who comes in late. He knows right where to go to turn in his paperwork, goes over to his desk, pulls out his book. The teacher doesn't say a word. She's at the back working with another student on some paper or memory work quietly, and all the students are going up. Somebody's marking something on the board. Somebody's pulling something else out. It just flows. It's incredible, the classroom management and control that I've seen in some of the classrooms. In other classrooms, I had one administrator tell me that his best class was, you know, his best teacher was in this classroom, and I had two of the committee members come out shaking their heads saying, that's a nightmare in there. Oh, it's just a nightmare. And I walked in, and I had to agree. It, It's not the classroom that the school would want to put forward to visiting parents. Administrator input, I could just go right down the list. Some of these I've mentioned already. The board not following the bylaws. You know, is there micromanagement of the administrator? Is the administrator given policy, enough policy and latitude that he can do or she can do her job, or are they being imposed upon on a regular basis? Are they being circumvented by the board? What's going on? And there's two sides to every story. The first man to make his case known seems right until his neighbor comes and cross-examines him. It's Proverbs. But we'll ask the question if it looks like we're getting mixed signals. And we're generally pretty straight up the middle with the questions. It doesn't help anybody beating around the bush. ACCS will not accredit a school that accepts government vouchers. If a school's utilizing the public busing system, school busing system, or taking milk money, or they're getting funding from the state to go buy a history book, those things happen. Those won't shut a school down typically. Voucher money is operational cash that is typically used to offset teacher salaries, and ACCS has made the determination from the start that we will not accredit any school that is taking the government vouchers. And there's a long explanation of that I can make known to you, and would be happy to, by the way. But I won't make that the objective of this time. You're welcome to ask to see it or get a copy. And it's also in the handbook. And then I'll just show you the first page here. This is our current accreditation standards. This is how they start off. But that's all the white you'll be seeing on the page, and it's pretty easy. But we also, in the process, show what a discrepancy is in general terms. You know, you can write rules, but the first time something happens, the ball lands on the line, and you can't make a rule for everything. We don't ask how many lumens the lights in the classrooms are. We don't walk around with a meter. We kind of anticipate that if kids are squinting when we walk in the classroom, or they can't find their desk, or they can't see their paper, it's probably not adequate. We don't want to know exactly how many lumens each light bulb's putting out. And I would also think that parents, Christian parents, aren't going to enroll their kids in a warehouse program. So, accreditation results. Major discrepancy, we define what it is. Major discrepancy is defined as the failure of a school to meet one of the criteria listed in our Section E, which lists the accreditation criteria. But I guess the thing to point out here, we break this all down and we show what the school's condition is. It's kind of the little standard nomograph, so you can go in and see, golly, if we do this, this is what we do, this is what they say they'll do, here's how much time we have to fix it. A provisional accreditation for a school that's starting the accreditation process initially. No, that's not correct. Yes, that is correct. Provisional accreditation, if you're starting initially and you have discrepancies, you get 2 years to fix it. Probationary, if you've already been accredited, but now you've just taken away 1 year of your secondary Latin program and you don't meet our accreditation criteria, we'll give you 2 years to fix that. You can fix it in a year. We're not going to say, okay, this is October, change it tomorrow. You know, parents have got their kids enrolled, things have been set up. We're not interested in jerking schools around, but there's time to correct these things in a reasonable, peaceful sort of way. Questions? Yes, ma'am.
Does your school's logic and school's rhetoric need to be in place for 5 years or time or whatever?
Yeah, yes. The question is, do the school of logic and school of rhetoric need to be in place? If you meet the five-year window, do you have to also have the school of logic and school of rhetoric in place? You have to have grades 1 through 10 in place by the time the committee comes to look at the school. So if you can have grades 1 through 10 in place within that 5-year window, which means you'd have your grammar school, your logic school, and at least 2 years out of your rhetoric school, if you're just, depending on how you're breaking it up. But am I answering your question?
No, not really, because our grammar school has been open for 8 years.
Okay.
So it's open up 12th grade in the last.
No, as the school itself, as long as the school itself has been in existence for 5 years. In other words, say you started with grades K through 3 or something like that, and you've added a grade a year. Well, we just want to know that you don't have to have your logic school in place for 5 years and your rhetoric school in place for 5 years. No, the school itself has to be in place for 5 years. Yes, sir.
For parents who really value accreditation, enrolling their students at a new school, they have to be told that there's no way we'll be accredited before your child graduates in 12th grade if they're animated again. Has the board considered any way to deal with that? Because that could make the parents more serious about this, but they're students somewhere.
Yes, and fair question. The question is, if you're dealing with parents who are putting their kids in the school from the get-go, the school's starting up, and you can tell them, there's no way our school is going to be accredited before your kids are graduated from our school, that may lead parents to not or seriously consider putting their children someplace else. And has the ACCS board thought about that? And yes, and one board member said, no, it shouldn't be 5 years, it should be 10 years of existence. I mean, he was arguing to stretch it. The board said, no, our concern is that there may come a point in time where we might reduce that window, but what our problem was initially when we started the accreditation process, we saw schools that had been in existence 1 year, 2 years, and they didn't have the accreditation, they didn't have the classical Christian methodology in place. Their teachers hadn't been around long enough. They didn't grasp what they were doing. And we thought, you know, we're trying to recover something here. We really need to make certain that the school is viable, both time-wise, and that the teachers have had adequate time for training and practice in the classrooms. There were a whole bunch of factors that made the board say, we really need to give a school 5 years before we're going to come look at it. Once I could see us shortening that, once classical Christian education has been on the ground and for a much longer period of time. But one of the things that I've told schools who have asked that question, I said, you're not going to win everybody. I mean, Jesus even lost disciples, you know. So you need to let them go. But one of the things you can honestly do is you say, well, we're pursuing accreditation, and there's a timeline, and there are standards that we have to meet, and we have a plan to pursue that.
Could there be a possibility if you've been in existence for 5 years, and your top students get to 11th grade, and you're well into the accreditation process, or you could even complete it by that time. Is there a possibility of a provisional accreditation in that? And the only discrepancy is you haven't graduated the seniors.
And the answer is, at present, no. We used to be that way. We would grant accreditation if we came and you had grade 10 in place and we walked on the school campus and everything looked great and the trajectory was looking good. We were anticipating that you're going to, those 10th graders next year will be 11th grade, 12th grade the next year. We'll grant it to you now. But again, the board said, no, we've had too many other problems with all of a sudden classes vanishing that late in the game. And we said, no, we want to be committed to the whole process. And so the board said, we're not going to assign accreditation until they graduate their first class. So, to answer your question, no. But it's a fair question.
We're not accredited. We have to see if we get to that's not what I'm here for.
Yeah, you want to.
If I made a real good case of the value of accreditation, and then you say, but not for graduating seniors from any new school. Basically, what you said.
Maybe I'm not understanding your last comment.
No school can be accredited until they graduate.
Yes.
No matter how much they value everything that you've said and the motivations and the tests.
And again, there's a process, and that's what the board has determined to be of value right now to ACCS. So that's what we have. But you're fair to ask. Yes, sir.
Yes, for a list of staff requirements.
ACCS does not have, we don't say, well, do you have teachers with a BA or a BS in science or whatever it is. We don't ask that, but we want to know what the hiring policies are for your school and are you complying with them. But we also want to know, do you have teachers that are credible in the subjects in which they're teaching? And what degree are you doing that? I've been to schools where they said, I have this teacher, and she never even went to college. She hasn't set foot on a college, but she knows the subject cold. Well, your policy might require something other than that, but the board knows who she is, the administrator knows who she is, and all the families in the school want their kids to get in her classroom. She knows how to teach, and she knows her subject. Well, that's right, yeah. And if the school has self-consciously has a policy in place and has self-consciously made the exception to that policy and noted it someplace, you're just being honest. I mean, everybody likes to have the square blocks and the square holes, but the world's not that way. Yes, sir.
Pat, what's your awareness of the differences between ACSI and ACCS certification for those of us that are ACSI certified?
I have not been through, and the question is, what's the difference between an ACCS accreditation and an ACSI accreditation? And I honestly haven't been through an ACSI accreditation. I don't know. I'll tell you, you can ask Tom Garfield. He's been through both, and he can give you a real good answer. He originally pursued ACSI before ACCS had their accreditation program, but when one terminated, it came time to renew his ACSI, he determined it wasn't necessary. ACCS is not recognized in the state of Idaho as an